Dame Judi Dench.
Dame
Cook.
Dame Judi Dench. Dame Cook.
Ruth's Chris Steakhouse.
Okay, we're ready.
We're sibilant.
Welcome to Gag Me With a Chainsaw, a horror podcast about 80s slashers. I'm Corey.
And I'm Sarah.
And we love scary movies.
Hell yeah.
Hey, Sarah.
Hi, Corey.
How's it going?
It's going okay.
Yeah?
Yeah. It's the weekend.
Yeah.
We like that.
We're wearing shorts.
We're wearing shorts.
That's exciting.
Mm-hmm.
We might stick our feet in the pool.
I think we should go further.
Knees. Knees in the pool.
Knees in the pool. We can't go further than that.
No.
It's too cold still.
Yeah.
We're not built that way.
Someday.
Sometimes I want to. Like, sometimes I think, oh, what if I fell in right now?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I know it would be really cold for a second.
Cold plunge.
Yeah. I'm afraid something would happen to me. That my body would react negatively to the shock.
Oh, it's supposed to be good.
I don't know. I just don't think it's for me. I'm not a person who is motivated by discomfort.
Yeah. We'll get there in a couple months.
Yeah. I know. I can't wait.
Mm-hmm. What else is new?
I only have a couple of weeks left of school.
That's exciting.
That is exciting. I am failing still. I'm working so hard. Do you think everybody is riveted about my college experience?
I think so.
Are they rooting for me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Of course.
Okay.
We're all rooting for you.
Thank you.
And you can do it.
Mm-hmm. I am hoping that there are secret good girl points.
Yeah,
that come I've accumulated. On, prof. Come on.
Prof.
Come on.
Prof.
Yeah.
Prof.
Come on, Chris. I call him Chris.
Yeah, you stuck it out when so many other people just dropped the class.
Totally.
You tried hard. You went to tutoring.
I go to tutoring at least for 3 hours a week.
Yeah.
Sometimes 5 to 6. And yet I fail. Nevertheless, she persisted, but she continued to fail. That's the other half of that quote that they don't say as much.
Yeah.
It's like blood is thicker than water. Like, there's a whole other part of that quote that people just don't say.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What's it from?
I don't know. Let's say the Bible.
Yeah, sure.
I was talking to a classmate and something came up about formal wear, about dressing up,
okay,
or something, and I said, well, if we need them, I have 2 top hats. And he was quiet for a second and he said, why does that not surprise me? And I was like, oh, haha. But then I was thinking about it later and I thought, well, I don't like that. I don't want to be the kind of person. I guess it's too late.
Yeah. I don't know. What's wrong with 2 top hats?
Well, it's like if somebody thinks, oh, it's sure this person has 1 top hat.
Uh-huh.
Okay, you think this person, you know, maybe they're a magician or they have just a lot of panache.
Uh-huh.
Somebody that has 2 top hats, you think, oh, this is worse. They're a professional magician. Or
like into a steampunk have top
no,
hats?
Yeah. See? Yeah, this is my other top hat that has a broken clock on it.
It's wide at the top.
Covered in springs and gears. I don't know. I just don't. I guess I can't say I don't want it to be seen as that eclectic or weird, but it, like I said, it must be too late if I already give 2 top hat vibes.
Just go with it.
Yeah.
Aim for 3 top hats next
time.
Aim
for 3. I'm going to get into the fezzes. Last night, I was making the fez Venn diagram, and it was tiki people, Disney people, rockabillies, and then in the little circle that was way off to the corner that does not share any overlap is Shriners.
Yeah.
Right?
Classic.
Yeah. Classic fez. So... But there is overlap, I think, in all 3 groups. You put all those circles together right in the middle, fez.
Yeah.
Right? Along with leopard print button down.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm for you getting a fez.
Okay, but I'm not any of those kind of people. Stop.
about your rockabilly past.
Yeah, but it's in the past.
Bring it back. Leopard print fez.
Leopard print fez. I would wear that.
Yeah.
It's back, you know. Leopard print. Supposedly it's real hot. And I was like,
I've always liked it.
Went away.
Yeah, right. That's classic.
Leopard is a neutral. Totally. And I've been saying this for 25 years. And it's, oh, leopard's back. And I'm like, oh, I act surprised. Mm. I knew. I've been knowing.
Yeah.
What's new with you?
Oh, nothing. It's crap with my car and my house. It's not stopping. But we're going to say it's done. Nothing else bad is going
to
happen.
Nothing else bad is going to happen. You paid your debt to whatever.
Yeah.
Did you hit an old fortune teller with your car?
I did not.
You don't think that happened?
No.
Hmm. That was the only reasonable explanation that I could think of.
Yeah.
But that's it.
Maybe the devil's testing me?
The devil's testing you.
That's what I heard.
Well,
he likes to do that.
It's because you're the kind of woman that when you wake up in the morning and your feet hit the floor, the devil goes, oh, crap, she's up. So.
Wow. You should put that on a t-shirt or a bumper sticker.
Oh, TM. Yeah, I wrote that. Oh, crap, she's up, says the devil. It's 1:30. She's been awake for a really long time, but has just not gotten out of bed until now. That's what the devil says when I wake up.
Yeah.
You're almost done with school, too.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be good.
Mm-hmm.
Got to go work like one day into June, and then I'm done.
Hell yeah. And then summer, baby.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to put everything above the knees into the pool.
Yeah.
We're going to go in head first.
To the top of our fezzes.
I'm going to get a really tall one, so I have to go super deep.
Scuba fez.
I love it. A little snorkel coming out the top.
Well, we're doing this episode.
Uh-huh.
Do we want to say?
Yeah.
We did this episode before.
Yeah.
The audio was not great.
Yeah, it was boned. It's now in the vault.
But we love you guys, so we're back.
Yeah, we're doing it. We're re-recording. Take two.
Better than ever.
Better than ever. Actually, well, I don't want to invite comparison. But when we recorded the last one, we were on the downhill of those martinis we were drinking in the previous episode. And we were getting tired. We were ready for 1940s or 1950s noir nap.
Yeah.
And then we could be ready to go again. But yeah.
It's all for the best.
It is for the best. We were not on our A game.
The devil was testing us.
I was just going to say, the devil knew it though and messed up our audio. He was like, no. Mm-mm. Okay, speaking of the devil, we watched Late Night with the Devil.
We did.
Do you like it?
Yeah, it was fun.
I liked it too. One thing about it, I do like that the people in it don't have iPhone face. They don't look modern. But don't you feel that the speech cadence is so different than people talked in the 70s?
Yeah.
It's weird, right? Mm-hmm. And when you hear it, it's hard to not hear it. And that's one of the things I think is difficult about doing a movie set in this time now. Isn't that strange? I wonder why that is. Internet.
I guess. Yeah.
That's what I blame for everything.
Yeah. I feel like the movie could have been scarier.
Yeah.
But other than that, I liked it.
I mean, in the world of this movie, isn't The Exorcist already out? So that's way scarier than what's happening. And I mean, I don't know. I don't remember what year the movie is set in, but approximately, right? So the devil was doing better in that movie than in this movie. Also, well, I don't want to say that's a spoiler, but.
No spoilers.
No spoilers. I think it's worth watching, though.
Yeah.
I like the guy, the main guy, David Desmalchian.
Mm-hmm.
I like him. Mm-hmm. He's got a real silent movie star face.
He totally does.
Ugh. Yeah. Just so glamorous. I love him.
Yeah, let's see him full glam.
There were pictures. There was a photo shoot where he's dressed in like, he's got the little curl on his forehead and everything. I think I posted one of them on, reposted on Instagram, but like, so dreamy. So he almost looks like Valentino.
Mm.
Yeah. Very interesting.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what? We are going to spoil a movie because we spoil one every week.
We do.
Yep. So every episode, we pick a movie from the Letterboxd list, every 80 slasher, an attempt by John Hillman.
We say this guy's name every week, and he wants nothing to do with it. It's iconic.
But we love him.
We do love him.
And I picked a movie this week.
Yep.
I picked Deadly Friend.
And you picked it. This was not by chance.
No. It was purposeful.
Mm.
This movie came out in 1986. It was directed by one Wes Craven.
Oh.
You may have heard of him.
I think so.
So yeah, I had never seen it. I had always seen a certain clip from the movie.
Yeah.
And it looked fun. Had you seen it?
No, I had not seen it. But I do agree that it looked fun. Who's in it?
Well, it was written by Bruce Joel Rubin. And he wrote a lot of stuff. He wrote Ghost, Deep Impact.
Ghost.
Stuart Little 2. Jacob's Ladder.
Okay.
Yeah. And it was based on the novel Friend by Diana Hinsdale. It stars Matthew Laborteau as Paul. And Sarah, you might be familiar with him because he was on Little House on the Prairie.
I actually didn't watch a lot of that show.
Oh, just the books.
Just the books,
yeah. Okay. It also stars Christy Swanson as Samantha. We know her from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Mm-hmm.
The movie,
mm-hmm.
Not the show.
Yeah. We know her from going, how funky is your chicken? How funky is your chicken? How loose is your goose? My goose is totally loose.
And a lot of people that I had not really seen before, except for definitely recognize Anne Ramsey as Elvira Parker from a childhood favorite of mine, The Goonies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's in a lot of stuff, right?
I think so, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What else have you seen her in? Don't throw mama from the train?
Right.
Or don't throw her?
Throw mama from the train.
Okay, let's throw her.
That's a movie like A Fish Called Wanda that I think of as a very parent movie where all the adults in my life were going crazy for it when it came out. And I didn't watch A Fish Called Wanda for like 35 years. And I finally did watch it. And I was like, well, this wasn't what I thought it was going to be at all.
Oh.
I thought there was going to be a talking fish. Throw mama from the train. I don't think I've seen it.
I don't think I have either.
But everybody loves it. My mom sure liked it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll check it out.
It must be actually nicer to moms than the title lives on, because my mom liked it.
Okay.
And my grandma hates the Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer song, because it's not nice to grandmas.
It's so.
She would go, ugh. I just think that song is terrible. I'm like, you're safe. It's okay.
Yeah. But that's about all I got for cast.
Yeah.
Should we get into it?
I think we should.
Okay. Outside of a restaurant called Burger Heaven, a thief tries to steal from a Volkswagen van, but he is stopped by an aggressive yellow mechanical pincher hand that shoots from the back seat and clamps around his throat. The thing squeezes until, through a glitchy POV, we see two more people approaching. The choking stops, and the thief gets the bum's rush.
The old 86.
Out of the vehicle. The pinchers close the door and lock it, while the thief looks on in confusion. We don't see the owner of this metal hand, but we know his name because he loves saying it. It's Baby.
Baby.
What does that mean? Are they initials? One name superstar Dynamo a la Cher? Baby New Earth? Baby's Kiss?
Baby's Kiss?
We don't know. The apparent real owners of the Volkswagen reach the vehicle with their burgers and happily greet whatever lurks in their back seat, unaware that BB just choked a guy out with his metal pincher. They drive off, and we're left wondering, along with the car thief,
what the hell was that?
Warner Brothers presents a Pan Arts Latent production, a Wes Craven film, Deadly Friend. Deadly's written in a messy red font, and Friend is in a bigger blue font below. The screen zooms into Friend, and we see things through BB's pixelated view.
I'm concerned about this guy.
What could go wrong?
He may not be fully human. Maybe a Terminator. It's the next day, and the mysterious BB, along with teen genius Paul and Paul's mother Jeannie, are traveling to their new house in Welling, Pennsylvania. I thought that this lady was his sister for a good chunk of the movie.
Oh, no.
Good for her.
I knew it was his mom.
You did?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, good for her that there was some confusion. The trio arrive at their new home, and the house is just beautiful. Unfortunately, it seems like they might have some unpleasant neighbors, including a nosy woman across the street and an abusive father next door. It's a tough neighborhood. After some whimsical music plays to punctuate what a dream this house is, Paul pushes a button on a remote control to retrieve BB. He opens the door to the van, and we finally get a look at this thing. BB is a robot that teen genius Paul has invented. BB looks like if Johnny Five is Alive had a short, fat, yellow cousin. As Paul unloads BB from the van, another neighbor arrives on the scene. It's teenage paperboy Tom Toomey.
Woo!
Yeah. He gets one look at BB, who looks like if a sport clock radio fucked a bread box, and he drives his bike right into the curb and eats shit. As the boys get acquainted, Paul explains that he created BB. He developed the basic AI program for BB. So topical. But BB sort of makes up his own mind about things.
Yeah, I immediately have questions about this. Was he programmed to make that weird gremlin noise he's always making, or was that his choice?
You would think they're gremlin noises, but they're actually Roger Rabbit noises.
Okay.
Because BB is voiced by Charles Fleischer, who voiced Roger Rabbit. And he's like, Jason says, if you can't get Howie Mandel, you get Charles Fleischer.
Okay.
And I think he brings a whole different skill set. But they are very gremlin-y, right?
Yeah, it's odd. It's an odd choice.
It doesn't make sense for what the character is.
Oh.
When I was a kid, Johnny Five is Alive kind of scared me.
I've never seen it.
Short Circuit?
I think I've seen it when I was little.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's the robot in Star Tours? Disneyland?
Oh.
That drives you around?
Yeah.
In that... Was that Star Tours? Star Tours. Yeah. He's the pilot in that. I think that's Johnny Five is Alive.
Really?
I think so.
Well, I'm very familiar with him then.
He used to scare me when I was a kid. I don't know why. So when I saw this robot, I got a little.
Okay.
Chucky's baby monsters from Pet Semataries and Johnny Five is Alive robots, I guess, are my big fears.
Yeah.
I wonder what that means. I don't know. I'm gonna have to get out my dream book.
Yeah. Little guys.
Little guys.
But then you have Chihuahuas, so.
Yeah. But they are scary. One of them is really scary.
Yeah.
Well, let's get back to this robot. Paul says, he's always learning. He's full of surprises. That can't bode well. It's probably good. Tom hopes he'll see Paul at his high school, but whiz kid Paul has a university scholarship due to his vast intelligence and interest in neurology and AI. Check out the big brain on Paul. Tom acts nonchalant, saying, well, whatever, so long, BB, and rides away. He accepts this whole thing too easily.
Yeah.
I would say, I hope I don't see you at high school. Do you bring your robot with you?
He doesn't seem like he has a lot of friends. So.
No, but he should have more friends because he's great.
Big Tom Toomey fan.
Yeah. He's probably one of the people that when people talk about him, they have to say his first and last name.
Yeah.
Right? I was with Tom Toomey the other day, they say. He said he met an AI robot. And I was like, there goes Tom Toomey again.
Yeah.
Just making up stories.
Mm-hmm.
Paul and BB go inside, and BB shows his strength when he easily moves a piano out of the way so he can charge himself by plugging his electrical cord dick into the wall. This part's too wacky.
Yeah.
Everything is moving all stop motion fast. Uh-huh. And then the cord dick comes out. What are we supposed to be doing here? I don't get it. Are we supposed to be scared of this thing or what?
Not yet.
Okay.
It's very...
But we know it's
like family friendly feeling.
Yeah.
At this point in the movie.
The computer wore tennis shoes.
So at the university, Paul, Jeannie, and BB meet Paul's professor, Dr. Johansson, who gives them a tour of Paul's new laboratory. Later, Paul and BB are cleaning the yard when they meet their next door neighbor, Samantha Pringle. Mm. Paul notices some bruises on her arm, but Samantha tries to hide them. Sam's father, Harry, soon comes outside and stares at her menacingly, so she tells Paul she has to go. A little later, Paul talks to Tom about Sam. Tom agrees she has great tits, but warns Paul that her father is a crazy man.
Come on, Tom. He's always, you don't have to play blue.
Tom helps Paul teach BB to deliver newspapers.
Seriously, he's going to teach this AI robot how to do his job? Fucking read a book, Tommy. Read the newspaper. Oh my God.
Oh my gosh. Did you guys hear that?
My AI robot in my living room just went off.
It's never done that when we recorded before.
Corey, I'm always really nice to that thing, just in case. But the other day I said to myself, Sarah, you stupid bitch. And it went, that's not very nice. And I was like, I wasn't talking to you, but it was too late.
Oh, no.
And now she's listening to us do this. She's going to be offended.
We love you, Siri.
We love you, Siri. You never get anything wrong. You always play exactly the song that I ask for. You definitely always turn the lights on when I ask you to.
Yikes.
Do you think we're good to go?
Okay.
Okay. She's going to listen if she wants to.
Yeah. Nothing we can do.
I hope she doesn't call BB, though.
So they stop at the house of their reclusive neighbor, Elvira Parker, who threatens the boys with a loaded shotgun and expresses dislike for BB. As the three walk away, Tom reveals that his father is a security guard at the university hospital.
He's like, yeah, my dad's got a bitchin' set of keys.
Yeah. That's his one, like, bragging point. Yeah. The three are still walking along when they encounter a roving motorcycle gang.
The River Bottom Nightmare Boys and a couple of Rowdy Roddy Pipers. This is an incongruent gang. No. Yeah. Incongruous?
Sure.
They're messy.
The gang insults Tom, and they push Paul into a garbage bin.
Classic.
BB grabs the gang leader's crotch and lifts him up. BB holds the guy's dick hostage until he calls off his crew, and the gang rides away, with the leader vowing revenge. That night, Samantha visits Paul at his house.
She said she wanted to bake him cookies, but she couldn't, so she brings him a delicious box of almost home cookies. Mm. Yes, almost homes. Mm-mm. Nothing hits the spot like an almost home. We'll certainly never stop eating almost homes. The logo on the box is so prominent.
Yeah.
It's funny.
I think we need to get a sponsor now, Sarah. That was good.
I know.
Let us know if you want us to sponsor you.
Come on, almost homes. Let's bring it back.
The teens go upstairs and Samantha makes history as the first girl Paul has ever had in his room. They're looking at Paul's science stuff and having a good, clean time, but Samantha's father soon arrives and drags her home. That night, Samantha is asleep in her bed when she is attacked by her father. He is stopped by a broken-off flower vase that Samantha plunges into his chest. As a stream of blood pumps out of the mouth and the vase is still stuck in his chest, her father screams, "You can't stop me! You and that stupid yellow robot can't stop me!" Suddenly, Samantha snaps awake in her bed. It was only a violent and extremely bloody dream.
Phew.
Even with her overprotective father in the picture, Sam begins to develop close friendships with Paul, Tom, and BB. One day, they play a really pathetic game of basketball in the front yard.
It's like, I gotta find out what Corey thinks about their game.
No skills.
No skills.
Why are they playing on the grass anyways?
Right, because they got no fucking skills.
When BB tries to take a shot, he accidentally tosses the ball onto Elvira's porch. She stomps out of her house and takes the ball, refusing to give it back. BB's eyes freeze on Elvira's front door. His interior vision flashes red, and he lets out a garbled, angry stream of nonsense as if he will never forget this insult.
I swear this robot is calling everyone slurs. Every once in a while, you're like, what?
Yeah.
Excuse me? Like when Joe Pesci swears in Home Alone. It's very similar to that, but more. Hang on. Did I hear what I think I heard?
Yeah. Meanwhile, down at his science incubator for gifted boys, Paul is making troubling and impressive strides in the exciting field of poking a dead guy's brain with a stick. Ooh. They don't really tell us much about what he does, but his mentor sure is impressed.
Well, I'm sure that's something. On Halloween night, Samantha comes over with a bloody nose and asks for ice. She claims it's just a routine nosebleed, but Paul and Jeannie believe that her father is abusing her. Sam feels like there is nothing she can do, saying, "Sometimes I want to roll a truck over his face, but he's still my father."
Yeah.
Troubling. Samantha goes out with Paul, Tom, and Bibi for a night of mischief. They wear some very cool costumes, like bedsheet toga, torn jacket, and bowler hat. Paul doesn't wear a costume, so you'll have to guess which of those three costumes was the one Bibi was wearing. Not to defend my enemy, but E.T. had a better Halloween costume than this. Left Bibi in the dust.
Much better.
Which one was Bibi wearing? Bowler hat.
Yeah.
That's no disguise for a giant robot. Everybody's seeing him. You got to put him in a ghost
what
costume.
What if they think he's a person dressed as a giant?
You're still going to get a lot of attention because that is robot, a very
a bowler hat.
Complex. The classic robot in a bowler hat. You're going to invite a lot of questions, I think. A lot of attention.
Yeah.
At least they put E.T. in a wig. No, E.T. was in a ghost costume, right? You got to throw a sheet over that thing. That's what I'm getting at. Two eye holes. It's very easy.
Yeah.
After they spray some shaving cream on a car, Tom decides they should pull a prank on their mean elderly neighbor Elvira. Bibi easily unlocks her gate by cracking the combination through the power of AI. After the bot eagerly heads for the door, Paul is like, "No way, you're acting kind of weird lately," and powers off his friend. When Samantha bravely volunteers to ring Elvira's doorbell, alarms go off. Samantha starts screaming, and the gang hides in the shrubbery. Suddenly, Bibi powers back on. His eyes glow red, and he begins to approach Elvira. She shoots him with her shotgun.
Wow.
Stand your ground against robots and monkeys, always. You have you're right in the eyes of the law.
Yeah.
Castle doctrine. Sparks fly everywhere, and Bibi is destroyed. Paul is devastated by the loss of his friend, while Tom blames himself for suggesting the stunt. Mm. Thank God. It was the right move to kill off the robot when they did, because literally moments before it got blasted, I was saying the novelty had worn off and I couldn't watch it anymore.
Nice. On Thanksgiving Day, after a weirdly passive-aggressive open-eyed Grace, Paul and Jeannie eat dinner with Samantha. Afterwards, Paul walks Sam out and the two share their first kiss.
Wow.
Samantha returns home, outraging her father, who punches her in the face and pushes her down the stairs, causing her to severely bonk her head on the wall. Mm. After she's left twitching and unresponsive, Samantha is rushed to the hospital.
This scene is actually shockingly violent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the tone in this movie is like
all over
back
the place.
And forth. Samantha's left brain dead. Dr. Johansson tells Paul that she will be put on life support for 24 hours, and then the plug will be pulled. Paul becomes angry that the doctor would actually let her die. At home that night, while looking at a picture of himself, Samantha, and Bibi in better times, before he came to town and got everyone killed, Paul remembers how Bibi's microchip links artificial intelligence with the human brain.
Uh-oh.
Light bulb.
Mm-hmm.
With an idea in mind, he runs to Paul's house very early in the next morning to ask him for his father's keys to the hospital that he's always bragging about, so they can sneak into Samantha's room before the plug is pulled, switch her life support over to Bibi's old portable battery, steal her body, restore her brain functions using Bibi's chip, and get her feeling better.
That's all. Get well soon.
In a very funny shot from the street out in front of Tom's house, we hear him yell, "Are you out of your fucking mind?" But since they're out of options, he decides to go along with the plan.
There is the option of just leaving her alone, but it doesn't come up much.
No, this is like his first kiss. Come on.
Yeah, you've got to bring her dead body back. It's true.
That night, Paul drugs his mom's coffee to make her fall asleep.
Man, this poor lady was just trying to enjoy her leftover pumpkin pie after dinner. Also, giant glasses of milk alert. They were all drinking giant glasses of milk. You got the peas, you got the brown meat, you got the glass of milk.
Yeah. A balanced meal.
Yeah. I did like that it's shortly after Thanksgiving, so there was still leftover pie like in play. Mm-hmm. I like that.
Just before she passes out on the couch, Paul's mom mentions that the doctors are taking Samantha off life support that night at 9 and not 10 like Paul had thought. Paul and Tom get into the Volkswagen van, and unlicensed Paul drives them to the hospital. And I'd like to take a moment here to present Paul with the Michael Myers Award for Instinctual Driving. Yeah.
And that is definitely a stick shift. He's a natural.
They arrive at Welling Memorial Hospital and enter through the back with just 5 minutes to spare. To create a diversion, Tom is supposed to deactivate the hospital power from the basement. Don't worry, there's a backup generator.
He's not a monster.
Yeah. While Paul goes up to Samantha's room to be there the second the power goes out to switch her over to the cordless so he can stuff her into the laundry cart and ferret her away. However, unbeknownst to Paul, while he is on his way up in a slow elevator, Dr. Johansson has pulled the plug on Samantha early after her father urges, we should just do it. Mm. A couple minutes after she's already flatlined, the hospital goes dark. Paul enters Samantha's room, steals her corpse, and brings her back to the van. At this point, Tom is freaking out. An already dead body was not part of the plan.
No.
They take Sam to Paul's lab, and Tom is forced to scrub in as Paul's Igor.
As the switcheroo.
Paul inserts BB's microchip into Samantha's brain, explains that it should work like a pacemaker before the noggin, and brandishes his remote control, attempting to activate Samantha. Nothing happens. But then, Samantha's foot moves, causing delicate Tom to faint.
Only for a second. Not too much of my boy Tom now. Take it easy. The next morning, Paul and Tom take Samantha to the shed back at Paul's beautiful dream house. And it's like, God, I'd love to be reanimated there. The bay windows, ooh, the garden out front, please.
Nice.
The American dream. Tom goes inside and is distressed to find that Paul's mom is still crumpled on the couch and unresponsive. Paul is confused. He measured the drugs he used to dose his mom accurately, after all. The boys are beginning to panic further when Jeannie suddenly wakes up, surprised to find herself still on the couch. She never does this. She eyes Paul and Tom suspiciously and asks what they've been doing. The sweaty and guilty-looking boys respond, just fooling around. Jeannie's like, where's that robot that calls everyone slurs? That night, Paul goes out to his science shed and activates Samantha's microchip. She opens her eyes mechanically and starts to breathe. Paul soon teaches her to sit up. He doesn't really seem to notice that now she holds her hands like pinchers. It's probably fine. Now Paul has a robot wife, just like the man who I can only assume is his hero, Polly in Rocky IV. Mm. Right? Happy birthday, Polly.
Sure.
What do you mean?
Never seen Rocky IV.
What?
I've only seen Rocky I.
What?
And I saw that really late, and I was like, wow, amazing movie.
Amazing movie. Rocky II is great, too. Honestly, the entire franchise is great.
Okay, check them out.
Well, Polly gets a robot wife in Rocky IV. And it's a real ball and chain. Soon the police arrive at Samantha's home and inform Harry that her body has disappeared. In the middle of the night, Paul finds Samantha staring out the window, looking at her father with menacing eyes. And okay, eyeshadow. This blue color is great for her. Mm-hmm. She's so grungy, so avant-garde. It's just like smudged around her eyes to show that now she's part robot?
Yeah.
Okay. Worried that she will be seen, Paul deactivates her. I don't like this.
Yeah.
The next morning, Paul awakens and sees that Samantha is gone. He searches for her in the street, but there is no sign of her. It is kind of weird that next door, Samantha's dad wakes up from a sweaty nap on the couch to smoke coming from his cellar. Little does he realize, Samantha is home. Harry finds the cellar door open and goes to investigate. The furnace is freaking raging. But on the stairs, he sees a bottle of bourbon that is clearly a trap. It might as well be under a box with a stick. He's like, should I? Yes, I should. And reaches for the bottle. But an unseen Samantha grabs his hand from below the stairs and he goes flying down the steps towards the furnace. Sam emerges from the smoke and dark with a vacant smile on her face and both hands held up like BB's trademark pinchers. Terrified, Harry says, Sam, you're supposed to be dead. My God. Harry throws a shovel at Samantha, but she has scientific precision in her clamper hands and catches that shit midair before whipping it back at him so hard the head of the shovel gets lodged in a support beam. cornering Harry up against the furnace, she snaps his wrist backwards while he while he tries to say her death was an accident. Then she picks him up and sizzles his body on the side of the red hot furnace as he blubbers and begs. Despite his protests, Sam kills him by lifting him up and snapping his neck. Paul sees smoke pouring out of the chimney of Samantha's house and finally finds her in the cellar with her father's head alone burning in the fire. Horrified, he pulls the charbroiled Harry out of the furnace and hides the corpse in a pile of coal. Psycho 2.
Mm.
He goes home with Samantha and locks her in his bedroom. All this, like, controlling Samantha stuff with his, like, remote and when she sits up and everything, and now she has to hold her hands like a robot, but she's still clearly a lady. It just makes me think of, like, how many poor ladies are out there that have to pretend to be robots, like, to have, like, for their husbands, right? That's something you would see on Real Sex.
Sure. I'm sure that happens.
If that's you, call him.
Yeah, let us know.
You can be anonymous.
Maybe they're into it, too.
Do you like it?
Do I like pretending to be a robot?
No, that's what I would ask.
Oh.
Have you ever pretended to be a robot?
I haven't.
Me neither.
I've never been asked.
I don't think I would be good at it.
I could do it.
You would use your pincher hands to pinch the dick.
Yes.
Yeah. Pinch the nips.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, there's a lot you can do with the pincher hands.
You can do a lot with sex plugs. Robot. Mm-hmm. Don't knock until you try it, Sarah.
You're right. You're right. Would you rather pretend to be a sex robot or a Frankenstein? A sexy Frankenstein.
Sexy Frankenstein. Let me think about this.
Because this is a Frankenstein story, too, so.
I don't know. Maybe robot, but not reanimated robot.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's fair. Like the robot from the Jetsons. With one little wheel instead of 2 feet?
Yeah. Just like that. The sexiest robot I know of. Yeah, what's her name? Alice?
Rosie.
Rosie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Alice is Brady Bunch.
Uh-huh. She's human, I think.
Can't confirm.
That's true. I think I would go with sexy Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just go crazy, like, or, like, throwing stuff around because okay. I'm surprised and angry to be alive again. And my brain has gone bad, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's touching, though. It's a sad story about how I am rejected and those villagers. But then it becomes like a group thing.
Huh. Yeah.
The opinion on me turns. She's not so bad after all. Either way. Robot or Frankenstein, there's going to be some sucking fun.
Yep.
Robots, famous. I think robots are more famous for sucking and fucking than Frankensteins are, though.
Yeah. You don't think about that with Frankenstein.
Nope. Even though Frankenstein's super tall.
Tall. Kind of dark.
Everybody
kind of green.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that Dr. Frankenstein picked a big dick for him? He would have to.
That's a good question.
Was it attached already, or did they bolt it on separately? Like, they were like, this whole pelvis works.
I feel like he picked one that he liked. I feel like he picked one that looked like his.
Oh, yeah. A family resemblance. Yeah. That's narcissistic.
Yeah.
Which, I guess we already know that. But to taunt God in such a way?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, probably. It's its own separate thing. And he's like, this is the dick of a fucking murderer. And they were like, it's okay. It's big. It's not evil.
Should we talk about this movie?
Yeah. Okay. Where were we? Oh, yeah.
That night.
Samantha's father has been barbecued
yes.
in the furnace.
So that night, surprise, surprise, Samantha breaks free again. Never would have suspected that.
No.
Elvira Parker is home watching the stone cold classic, your favorite, my favorite, mm-hmm. The Bad Seed.
Woo! I'm not afraid of her.
When she sees the supposedly dead neighbor girl through the window, Elvira calls the police, but they don't take her seriously. You know, she probably calls them every
yeah,
night.
Yeah, she's like, I saw a sexy Frankenstein. Fuck robot outside. The cops are definitely not going to interrupt their late night sandwiches for her. Everybody in these movies is always eating the most fucking churro-inducing meal I've ever seen. where he's eating like an 11:30 pastrami with a cup of coffee. Sick.
Jealous. I love sandwiches.
Just shitting on company time.
That's the best way to do it.
Yeah, not when you're the cops, though. Get to work.
Yeah. Elvira looks outside and sees her gate is wide open.
We see a shot of Sam's pretend robot hand with the lock all fast, just like we saw BB do it earlier. And then she swats the lock off the fence. It's so unnecessary, but it's so funny.
A basketball bounces ominously into her living room, indicating that Samantha has broken in, and Elvira grabs her shotgun.
Us basketball bouncing into the room is, I think, a pretty direct changeling reference, right? It's pretty cute.
Yeah, only better because it's basketball.
Hell yeah, ball is life.
Ball is life. Mm-hmm. Elvira looks around, but doesn't see anything. She goes to her parlor. Love having a parlor.
Oh, yeah. A sitting room?
She goes into her parlor, picks up the basketball, and huffs, "Damn kids." Suddenly, Samantha attacks her from behind. They struggle until Sam throws the old lady up against the wall. When Elvira sees who her assailant is, she begins to scream. But Samantha, using her robot super strength, grabs the basketball and throws it at Elvira, nailing her so hard it causes her head to explode.
Corey, can you do this?
I don't think I'm there.
You gotta run some more drills.
I gotta run a few more practice drills.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is the clip, the famous clip.
Yeah, it's a famous GIF.
It's a famous GIF.
Yeah.
You like saying GIF or JIF?
GIF.
Me
it's
too.
Not GIF. That's not right.
Me too. JIF.
That's not right.
JIF is Jiffy peanut butter.
Yeah. That's settled. We settled that just here and now.
So if you were wondering, that's how you should say it.
Yeah.
Elvira's decapitated body runs around a bit, spurting blood until it falls over, twitches, and lies still on the floor.
This part is funny. You can see that it's like a guy under a dress, like holding the top of like the head and shoulders while there's just blood spraying everywhere. And the legs are kicking and stuff.
Oh, really? I thought they really killed her.
You thought it was really this lady doing the stunts?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wasn't this her last role?
That's because they killed her with the basketball?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Movie magic. Wow. Meanwhile, Paul wakes up from a bad dream about Mr. Pringle that is very reminiscent of A Nightmare on Elm Street.
Big time. Sam's dad's scary burned up head creeps up on Paul from under his blankets. First you think it's going to be sexy.
And oh.
Right? No. Something crawls up underneath his bed. You don't.
I wasn't thinking that. But... Oh.
My first thought is like, sucking and fucking. I'm sorry. I don't know what's wrong with me. I always do this.
It's okay. After a dream like that, all you can do is go to the fridge to pour yourself a big glass of milk.
Yeah.
So that's what Paul does.
This nightmare brought to you by milk.
Sam sneaks up on him, and when Jeannie hears the commotion, she wakes up and comes downstairs, causing Paul to quickly shut Sam in the pantry until his mom goes back to bed. This is all getting very messy, with Paul having to constantly hide Sam from his mother and everyone else.
It's turning into, like, British farce. Just, like, people opening and closing doors. And
The police finally arrive, and they discover Elvira's and Harry's corpses.
All the officials are very confused about what the hell happened to everyone's faces.
When Tom learns that Samantha's killing people, he faints again.
Understandable!
Have you ever fainted?
No.
I don't think so. I think it'd be kind of fun.
I think it would be kind of fun.
If you don't hit your head.
No. And that is always what I'm afraid of.
Yeah.
There's been a couple times where I'm like, ooh, I'm dizzy or whatever. But I've never fainted. Have you ever seen somebody faint?
I don't remember seeing someone faint.
It's scary.
Mm-hmm.
I saw my sister faint one time, and I saw my great-grandma faint one time.
I've seen someone having a seizure.
That's scary, too.
That's also scary.
When my great-grandma fainted... she fainted in our kitchen, and I was like a kid, and I was like 11, something like that. And I ran to my parents' room. We were like doing dishes or whatever. My parents were in their room and they were fighting. But I ran in there. My dad had just gotten out of the shower and he was naked. But I was like, I don't care about that. Old Nana passed out. She's laying on the ground. And my dad just ran out of there and picked her up off the floor.
Oh.
Yep. Then he went and put pants on.
Did she faint because somebody played Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer?
No.
No. Oh.
That's not that grandma.
Oh, okay. That's what I was thinking. I was like, probably wrong grandma.
No, different one. She probably would have been fine with it. The next day, Sam has an existential crisis when she sees a photo of Paul, Beebe, and herself.
Begs, like, which one am I?
Yeah. Begs the question of, did the robot have an awareness of self previously? Was Paul always holding it in front of mirrors and saying, that's you? You think?
Yeah.
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 He's like, aren't you cute? Look how cute you are. My dogs won't never look. And I'm like, you're too humble. Just look how cute you are.
Admire yourself.
Yeah. Paul tries to comfort Sam, but he leaves when he gets a phone call from Tom, who says he's going to snitch. Paul promises things will change, but Tom refuses to budge, claiming that the secret is eating him alive. I believe it. He doesn't seem like the kind of kid who handles a conspiracy very well.
This has gone too far. Yeah.
He's fainting everywhere. He's fallen off his bike from the very beginning. Yeah. He can't work like this. This is terrible. Jeannie meets with Dr. Johansson and discovers that her son has not been attending class for the past few weeks, even though she's been dropping him off herself. At home, Tom visits Paul and they go up to the attic to see a now very skittish Sam. Sam approaches Tom with her hands in pincher formation, but Tom freaks out and tries to leave, saying he's going to call the cops. Can you blame him? She has all those scary shadows on her face now. It's a mess. The boys begin to fight, and Paul gives Tom a bloody nose. Leave him alone.
Yeah.
You dragged him into this. Now you're beating him up?
Mm-hmm.
Jeannie arrives at home, and Tom leaves saying, you've got a crazy man for a son.
That's his favorite insult. I know.
Tom goes outside and is immediately tackled by Samantha when she jumps out of the attic window, breaking the glass and landing directly on top of him.
Yeah, this is so funny. I knew about the basketball scene, but I did not know about this scene.
Yeah, she just dives right through the glass.
And it's like you knew it was going to happen. And when it does, it's like, yes.
Yeah. Paul and Jeannie save Tom. Paul is so mad, he slaps Samantha and she does not appreciate it. She grabs him by the throat and starts to squeeze. Good. But before she can kill him, she lets go and runs away. Paul has a huge boner now, probably, because part of this robot sex lady thing is that she chokes you with her pincher hands, I would imagine.
Okay.
As Paul chases after her, the leader of the biker gang confronts him and tries to get his revenge. Guy, get out of here. What are you doing back right now? When he pops back up.
You're like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He did say he was going to get revenge.
He did. We should have believed him. This greasy thug taunts Paul about his robot being all blown up before getting physical. The boys fight, and Paul is definitely losing when a familiar voice says,
BB.
Sam steps out of the shadows and walks slowly towards the bully. He cannot believe his eyes. When he sees it's Sam, he goes, hey, girl.
Yeah, it was so funny. Hey, girl.
Hey, girl.
Hey, girl, hey.
Samantha lifts the biker over her head as a police car drives up and she yells, beep, 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 before throwing him into the car's windshield, killing him. She runs off and is pursued by Paul and the police. She easily clears a police car by jumping over it and makes her way back to Paul's shed. He meets her there and tries to comfort her. He is amazed as he realizes that Samantha is becoming more human, even embracing him. The police arrive and point their guns at Samantha, warning her not to move. Her Samantha and BB sides get all mixed up, and she finally calls for Paul in her regular voice. Then, in an attempt to protect Paul from an officer who is restraining him, she glitches out, lifts her pincher hands. The cop in charge goes, oh, God, no. And she runs straight at a cop, and he fires. The bullet hits Samantha and she dies in Paul's arms, saying his name in her own voice.
Later, Paul sneaks in and visits Samantha in the morgue.
This kid is sick.
He pulls her out of her cold drawer, fully intending to steal her body yet again.
Mm-hmm.
Before he can, an evil version of BB emerges from Samantha's head, ripping her face open and grabbing Paul's neck. The skin on her arms shreds to reveal robotics and machinery underneath as the eyes glow red and the pointed teeth grin. The Samantha BB robot says, come with me, Paul.
BB.
BB. Off screen, Paul screams as Samantha / BB crushes his neck.
Bamantha.
You know what I like about this movie? Scientifically accurate.
Yeah, this is exactly how it would go down. Swanson truly gave us a Tor Johnson level performance here.
Oh gosh,
this is not a slasher.
No,
they keep not being slashers.
Yeah,
it's okay.
Not very slasher. I mean, it's not the least
POV and stuff.
Not the least slasher movie we've
reviewed.
Which
remains Blood Beach, I think.
I think so. Yeah. So originally, this was a sci-fi thriller without any graphic scenes, with a bigger focus on plot and character development, and a dark love story centering on the two main characters. But people were like, this is Wes Craven. We want more graphic, bloody violence. So they added that.
Yeah.
Warner Brothers Executive Vice President Mark Canton and the film's producers then demanded the script rewrites and reshoots, which included filming gorier death scenes and nightmare sequences, similar to the ones from Nightmare on Elm Street. But after these reshoots and re-editing, the film was drastically altered, losing much of the original plot and more scenes between characters, while other scenes, including more grisly deaths and a new ending, were added. According to the screenwriter, this version was criticized by the studio for containing too much graphic, bloody violence, and then was cut back for release. So, kind of a mess of production. Yeah. And you can kind of see that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, very ahead of its time, AI.
Mm-hmm.
Also, very La de Poor Things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good double feature.
Uh-huh. Make it a triple with Frankenhooker.
Yeah, why not?
But yeah, it's kind of gross.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't even really, he doesn't know this girl. And everybody is just controlling her about herself. Her dad and this boy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It ain't right.
It ain't right. That's science for you.
Well, what did the critics say about this movie?
All right, let's see here. Oh, Malton. Malton popped in on this one.
Nice.
Malton gives it 2.5 out of 4. Inventive teenager in love with the girl next door revives her, all of Frankenstein, after she's killed. More heart and more actual entertainment than you'd expect from a Wes Craven horror film, though it's probably the only movie ever made in which someone is beheaded by a basketball.
Yeah.
Probably. Desmond Ryan, the Philadelphia Inquirer, 1 out of 4. Craven's film is a modest pleasantry until he remembers who he is. That's not fair.
Yeah, it's just hard that it's like trying to be two different things and they don't really mesh.
His movie promptly turns into I was a teenage brain surgeon with a clinically specific operation that brought a nauseated groan from many in the audience. Really? Grow up. Restoring a dead girl to life in this league merely entails shoving what looks like a cheap digital watch into her cranium and sewing up the scalp. It's the pacemaker for the noggin.
Yeah.
Beneath all this is a rather shrewd fantasy for teenage boys about taking absolute control of a girl's body. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And then video hounds.
Mm, woof.
They sent the Spuds McKenzie dog to go check this out. He gives it 2 bones out of 4 bones. A well-meaning horror flick? Question mark. That's what Wes Craven has tried to provide for us. When the friend of a lonely teenage genius is accidentally killed, he decides to insert his robot's brain in her body, though the results aren't entirely successful. The same can be said for the film, which was based on Diana Henstal's more effective novel, Friend.
Oh, yeah, this dog read the book.
I don't
buy it.
Please. Yeah.
Well, that's what they thought. I can't say I don't agree with most of what was just said.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not going to go in my top 5 Wes Craven movies.
No. It's got some fun stuff, though.
I think I watched it wrong. I watched it by myself.
Yeah.
This would have been better with the group of
people. Yeah. It would be.
But it does have some fun parts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The robot thing is played out by this point already.
Yeah.
And the fact that the robot does look so much like Johnny Five is Alive is like, okay. I don't know. I don't think that's the robot's full name. It is. Johnny Five is Alive. But yeah. Not for me.
No.
It was okay.
It's okay. I agree.
It's solidly in the middle.
Yeah.
For me.
Yeah. So what are you going to give it? Or should I say?
You say.
I'm going to give it 5.5.
I agree.
It is like in the middle, but it does have some fun parts.
And it has that basketball thing.
It's worth watching. once.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wouldn't rewatch probably.
Yeah. Unless you're a big old deadly friend head.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess they're probably out there.
For sure.
Yep. This movie is kind of a lot like Tammy and the T-Rex.
Okay.
Because doesn't the brain go into the T-Rex?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then it's like this other, this, you know what I mean.
Yeah, that one's a lot more fun.
Way better. I was just going to say, Tammy and the T-Rex is way better. If you're going to watch a movie like this, I would say Tammy and the T-Rex, Poor Things.
Then maybe give then Deadly maybe Friend a Deadly shot. Friend. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, I guess that's that on this.
Yeah. Let us know what you think. Is this your favorite movie?
Is this your favorite movie?
Of all time?
This is the only movie you watch and you can't go to sleep without it. Do you have to say BB? I don't know, dude. I'm tired today. We got to pick our next movie.
All right. Let's see. Are you going to go back to the hat?
Going back to the hat.
Okay. Top hat?
No. I would just stick my hand in and a rabbit would come out.
Yeah, that's risky. Then you have a rabbit.
I don't want that. I'm allergic. Okay. Our next movie is... Uh-oh. I can't get it open. It's sealed too tight for your protection. Puppet Master!
What?
Exclamation point.
Ooh. This one might scare you, Sarah. They're little.
I know. I would drop kick them. I think I'd be afraid I would hurt them.
Yeah, because they're kind of not that evil. They're like, depending on...
Well, I guess spoilers.
We'll get into it. Yeah.
We don't have time for that
I have seen Puppet Master. Have you?
Yes. They used to show it on the Sci-Fi Channel all the time.
Exactly. You've seen it, even if you haven't seen it.
Yeah.
You've seen parts of it.
I remember seeing part of it at my grandma's house when I was a kid and being like, nope.
Yeah.
Changing the channel real quick.
Ooh.
I knew that was way too scary for me.
Spooky.
I know. You gotta know your limits.
Okay, I'm excited.
Me too.
Oh my gosh, Sarah, this has a lot of sequels though.
Mm-hmm.
Usually I watch them all. I don't know if I'm gonna be able to.
You're just gonna have to prioritize what you want to see.
Yeah. Maybe I can call in for some help.
Yeah, you're going to have to. Call in if you want help.
Yeah, please let us know if you have a Puppet Master sequel that you love and want to talk about for like
90 seconds.
90 seconds.
Yeah, call us 661-454-7499. Put it in your phone.
Do it.
Just put it in your phone.
What's the worst that could happen?
Yeah, sometimes you want to call somebody because you've been drinking a little bit, but nobody wants to take a phone call anymore.
Yeah.
But you can call our voicemail and leave a little message.
Mm-hmm.
We would love it. Where can they follow us, Cor?
You can follow us on Instagram at gagmewithachainsaw.
Mm-hmm.
You can give us a call, as mm-hmm. previously stated.
Mm-hmm. You could follow us in your car and we would evade you because I took defensive driving. And Corey's a really good navigator. She would be like, turn right here. And I would turn left. And she would say, no, I said turn right. And I would say, well, I thought you meant turn left. And it would be a whole thing. But we would get away accidentally. But we would get away.
Mm-hmm.
But we wouldn't hit anything because of my defensive driving. And I'd parallel park.
That's impressive.
One time I hit a wheelbarrow.
Hey, can you teach me how to parallel park?
Hell yeah, I can.
Okay, let's do it.
I can teach you how to do it front ways too.
Okay.
Which is very hard.
I need to learn. I just... don't do it.
Yeah,
and now I go to LA a lot and
I
actually need to do it. You don't need to do it in Bakersfield. You can just park a little farther.
I do it a lot to show off.
Yeah. Well, I would do it too.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have a backup cam or anything like that. So no cheating.
Yeah. I guess that does make it easier now, but I didn't learn at a time with backup cams and it was really scary, but it's easy to do. It's just geometry.
I mean, I do it once in a while, but I don't try it if it's like a tight spot.
I feel you. Sometimes I put my car there in it and I'm like, do I fit? And like I line it up and I'm like, okay, let's go. I know it's going to be tight. I just always hope there's nobody standing around because that's the worst when somebody's standing around.
That's the thing. If nobody's there, who cares? If somebody's driving behind you and they're like, ugh.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm good. I can usually get it in one, maybe two little adjustments.
Okay.
But sometimes I can just slide right in there, man. I used to work for a law firm and have to go to the courthouse so many times a day that it was like, if you saw that spot up front, mm-hmm. you took that shit.
Okay.
So if you had to front ways parallel park, you would front ways parallel park. And I don't know why it's so much harder, but it is.
Well, I need a lesson.
Yeah, I can teach you.
Or 12.
My aunt taught me when I was learning to drive, and we were out on Thanksgiving while everything was in the oven or whatever. And she told me that we couldn't go home for dinner until I parallel parked good like 3 times. So, boy, that was in between those rocks like nobody's business.
Nice.
Yep. Get me to my mashed potatoes and my leftover pumpkin pie. My dosed and drugged milk. As always, please donate to the Bakersfield Burrito Project and help feed our hungry and homeless neighbors here in Bakersfield on Cash App and Venmo, Bako Burrito Project. You can send $5.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Literally.
And our phone number, you can reach us at 661-454-7499.
Yep. Really pushing the phone number.
Give us
number.
A ring.
Mm-hmm.
Give us a ring-a-ling if you want that ding-a-ling. Remember that song?
You wrote that?
No.
Oh.
It went, give me a ring-a-ling if you want some ding. Give me a ring-a-ling if you want some ding-a-ling.
I like it.
Yeah.
Who sings it?
I don't know. I want to say like 69 boys.
Oh.
Well, I don't know if that's true.
Is there 69 of them or is that just like their thing?
You would think there'd have to be.
There should be. That's too many boys, honestly, if I was to be honest.
Yeah, imagine them doing a concert. They're getting paid pennies per person.
Imagine them doing a cozy gangbang. This is too cozy. It's too many people. I watched the cozy gangbang, finally.
Oh.
It was so cozy.
It was very caring.
The vibes were so good. Almost too good, where I would have been like, okay, we're not friends after this. Everybody calm down. No, brother, you go. Your meat looks ready to rock.
Right? If you want the link, DM us. Hopefully you don't live in Texas where it's banned.
Oh, no. Imagine. Mm. This is an issue for the voters. Not being able to access a cozy gangbang. That would get me to the polls, man. Something, something polls.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, 69 people. Somebody, I'm sure somebody has done it.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to go Google 69 man gangbang.
What about 420? We just had 420.
We just had 420.
Yeah.
420 people. Mm-hmm. That's too many.
And if everybody's high...
Things get confusing. Or you have 4 ladies and 20 dudes. Right? That's
okay.
Gangbang math. Or when you have a 69 gang cozy gangbang, is that counting the lady or is it 70 actually?
I think,
68 men, I think one lady?
I think it could be any gender, but I think it has to
be. Sorry.
It has to be a circle of 69 people. So you need a big area.
Room. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, well, yep. Google 69 gangbang.
And let us know what you find out. Because we're scared to Google it.
I'm not scared.
Okay.
I'm going to find out how they do the math on this thing. So one of my millennial pickleball neighbors just ran by with his chasing this pickleball. I'm going to ask them, where do they keep the pickle?
I don't know.
When they're playing pickleball. Where's the pickle go?
Yeah.
What happens to the pickle? I'll tell you this. I've never seen it.
I've never seen it either.
So that makes me concerned.
Yeah, we played in high school. We had a whole like little unit on pickleball. And there was no pickles involved.
There's no pickles. So they're not up the butts.
Mm.
You don't have to clench it in your butt cheeks while you play. And then if you drop the pickle.
Maybe with the pros. We were just high school kids. So.
Yeah, probably my neighbors one dill pickle in their butt cheeks. Right now, and if you drop the pickle, you have to give it to the other team, and then you get as many points for however long you keep the pickle clenched in your butt cheeks.
Oh,
I think.
Okay, that makes sense.
I mean, I'm not super like read up on the rules of pickleball, but that's just what I assumed was happening. I'm like, you guys are all blowing out your ankles and knees for this. You can just put a pickle in your butt cheeks at home mm-hmm. for free. Yeah, they play in the street, like Wayne and Garth.
I know. They had to move for me.
And they're like, game on. It irritates everybody that comes over to my house. That's the downside of a cul-de-sac.
I don't know. I support it.
You do?
It's a fun hobby.
I support it. Do whatever you want to in your own home. I'm all like community, but then when people are doing things in my community, I'm like, get out of here. I don't know. They look like they're having too much fun. It's bothering me.
They've never invited you.
Yeah. Let me hold the pickle. I'll be the pickle watcher. Or like, I have to watch.
What if you just went out there and watched them and you're like chomping down on a pickle?
One of those pickles in a bag.
Yeah. Hot mama.
Yeah. And I have a chair.
You have a whole jar next to you. That'd be funny.
Yeah. And offer them pickle juice for the electrolytes.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for listening.
Thank you. We'll see you again.
We will. One day.
Tell us your Puppet Master thoughts and we can put it on the show.
All right. Well, talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us on Gag Me with a Chainsaw with your hosts, Corey and Sarah. Music by White Bat Audio. Find us on Twitter at Chainsaw Podcast and on Instagram at Gag Me with a Chainsaw. Until next time, unpleasant dreams.